this episode, we hear from Sue Anderton. I first met Sue when she worked at Marketfield School, and she's gone on to lead The Maze, which supports family and children across Essex. We talk about how the system sometimes fails some of our young people, what might need to change, and what we can learn from the young people. Okay, Sue, can you tell me what inspired you to get involved in education and a little bit about your journey?
Yeah, so when I was at high school, I was doing my Duke of Edinburgh Award. And as a part of that, I got involved volunteering for Suffolk MenCap. And what I did was would go to volunteer on outdoor and adventurous pursuits holidays with young people with learning difficulties. And I absolutely loved it and just realised that that's definitely what I want to do with my life. So as soon as I was old enough, I went off to teacher training and I took my degree in special education. And that's what I've always done ever since.
And obviously I met you at Marketfield School, which was pretty, and we worked together for a few years there. And you've then since gone on and you now run The Maze. Can you tell us about The Maze? Because I know it's a fantastic organisation. It helps many children and families across Essex.
Yeah, so obviously, during the course of my working career, I've had a lot of contact with families. And when you're a teacher in a special school, you often have this homeschool diary. So I just found that lots of parents would be writing in every day with a lot of the same things that they were struggling with or that was tricky for all of them within family life. So just started working with the families just doing coffee mornings in the beginning, and found that coffee mornings we were talking about the same things, and that just in the end morphed into a specialist program so that we would cover various topics each week. And it's kind of gone from there, really. Originally, I was just doing, obviously, for the parents while I was working at Marketfield for those parents, and it just grew so big. And so now what we have is somewhere usually around four groups per term running across Essex in Harwich, Clacton and Colchester. We have monthly drop-in sessions for parents in Clacton, Harwich and Colchester, and a whole load of online stuff as well that obviously has been a response to the current COVID situation.
Yeah, of course. So you mentioned there about key topic. What are some of the real key topics that you see? And I know that's a big question because there's probably so much that you talk about. Maybe if you could pick three that maybe always come up.
Yeah, well, they're kind of related, really. I would say the number one problem that parents report is with problems around behaviour and conflict at home. And usually what I find is that parents would like me to suggest to them, how do I manage and stop this behaviour? But what I find is that when I have a conversation with them, that sometimes parents haven't got a good enough understanding about what their needs of their child are. So they just need more information about the needs of their child. And usually this is around things to do with sensory processing. So, you know, a lot of children and young people feel very overwhelmed by too much noise, or too much smells of food or other people touching them or regulating their feelings and things like that. So all of that can be related to sensory difficulties. So once parents understand that, there's a huge part there of them being able to then begin to understand how can we manage conflicts.
Yeah.
And I would say the other really big topic that comes up is school provision. So I hear lots of reports of fantastic schools and fantastic teachers and school staff doing a brilliant job. But I would say the majority of what I hear is where children and young people and their families are not satisfied or feeling like there's a disconnect there with what their needs are and what is being provided for them at school. So I think they're probably two of the main topics that come up at Maze.
Okay, so if there's parents listening to this podcast and they want to get involved with Maze and maybe attend some of the coffee mornings that you spoke about, how would they start, to go about that? Where would they find that information?
Yeah, so I've tried to make sure that the website that I've got has lots and lots of information on there. So that's probably the best point of call. On the website, there's information for parents, and on there you can find what we cover in the weekly program that we have. And I just want to say as well, Kieran, that I never call Maze a parenting course. The implication there is you need to go on a parenting course because you've got to learn how to be a better parent, and I'm not about that at all. So yeah. I would call it a program.
Yeah.
Every parent on this planet wants to be the best parent that they can be, and all I am doing is sharing information with parents that they might not otherwise be able to have had access to. So that on the website is information about the program, there's also some different resources on there. So there's like a learning materials section. There's loads of little videos that I've recorded on there with various short topics. And there's also a coffee mornings and events section so that people can see what's coming up. Obviously, it's all a little bit different at the moment because of the COVID situation. So I'm just about to set up virtual, and we've been running through lockdown, we've been running virtual coffee evenings twice a week. Now the restrictions are being eased, we're reverting back to once a month, but we're still going to be doing those online, and that will be on the website very soon. I'm working on that currently. So probably the website contains the most information. I have a YouTube channel as well, which is called May Says. And all of the videos that I produce are all on there for you to have a look at, including we've got a webinars playlist. So there's a series of webinars about anxiety on there. And then Facebook is probably the place where I share the most information on pretty much a daily basis, but like multiple times a week, I'm sharing all sorts of links and information and videos and all sorts of things like that. So I'd say that's probably the best place to get information.
Yeah, I really like the issue you touched on there, actually, because I've had conversations before with parents who may have been told by someone the way you described it as a parenting course. Nobody's ever saying that. Some professionals have said it that way, which is then not a fair reflection of actually, you know, it's sometimes if we don't have the information to something, we can't always adapt or do something in the best way possible. So it's all about the information.
Yeah, definitely. So this is my perception of what happens is a parent at some point will notice that the development of their child is not going the way perhaps that they had expected, or maybe not going the same as it had for their other children, or they notice differences where they think, I'm sure this isn't quite, you know, this is not quite what is supposed to happen here. I'm confused. So obviously at that point they start to seek information, or maybe somebody else has pointed it out to them. And that will usually end with an appointment with a pediatrician. So the pediatrician will undertake an assessment with the child or young person. And at the end of that assessment, we'll confirm, you know, your child has this condition or doesn't have this condition. And mostly parents then leave that appointment without really the information that they need about what does that mean. So say, for example, a child or a young person is observed with a view to seeing if they're on the autism spectrum. And the process confirms that, yes, you know, you are on the autism spectrum. Most parents don't really know what that means. You can click around, but you know, there are so many millions of hits on Google that you come across about autism that you can be feeling completely overwhelmed. So I'm always thinking about, you know, when the pediatricians are observing children, in their mind, they're thinking about sensory difficulties. They're thinking about how does the child process language? How do they communicate? How do they understand what's being said? Are they thinking in a very literal way? What about their social understanding? How do they get on with friendships and that kind of thing? So the pediatrician has all that information in their head, but the parents often don't know that. Yeah. That's really my aim with Maze, is to make sure that parents have that information. Obviously, I've worked with children for over 30 years, and I have my own children as well. And I think that I've learned so much from that. And I realise that many of the parents that I've worked with over the years don't have that information. And so, you know, although I can give strategies to help and support children and young people, that's the easy part, actually. You have parents that don't really understand or don't understand the value of why you would use those strategies.
Yeah.
That often means that you have a conflict there between the child and the parent, because the parents who, let's just say that they are themselves neurotypical, they don't have any kind of additional need, they will often make an interpretation about a behaviour and they will label it something that a neurotypical person would say, well, that's naughty or that's rude or you're just being defiant or you're just being difficult on purpose. And actually, most of the time, that's not the case. I'm not saying that children and young people aren't sometimes naughty. You know, we all know they are. But for me, I always say to parents, I would prefer it if you would default on the side of giving your child the benefit of the doubt and thinking, what have I as their parent not fully understood here? Get all that information, put some good strategies, change your attitude and behaviour and the way you respond to things. And then if you still think, yeah, actually my dad is being naughty, well, then you might use like traditional like behavioural strategies like, but actually what I feel really passionately about is, because children often then present differently to a neurotypical,
yeah,
that those children get a lot of negative feedback right from the very beginning. So from babies, from when they're babies, those babies often perhaps cry quite a lot. So their parents will say, you're such a demanding baby. And I feel like that narrative, that story about that child being difficult and naughty sticks with them. And I'm really keen to just, for all adults, to stop thinking that way and to really understand their needs first.
Where I was going to come in there, Sue, is because I think we live in a society where people compare all of the time. So people compare image, people compare, you know, well, my child didn't do this, so what? And it's like, not that it becomes a competition, but it almost, like you said, it's that word different. Well, actually, we are all different, and we are all, you know, children are going to learn in different ways as well. And that's, I know you spoke about babies there, but then if you, you know, you take a few steps forward and we look at school, part of the reason, you know, we're going into schools and educating is because we understand children are different, but sometimes that's not always seen by the system.
Well, yeah, I've got two thoughts about that. I mean, I could talk about the system for ages.
But yeah.
The one thing I wanted to say is this about comparison.
Yeah.
So I always, one of my mantras is this quote by Theodore Roosevelt, that comparison is the thief of joy. And yes, this is so true, because you, yes, can feel super happy about something that you've done or an accomplishment that you've made. And the minute that you or somebody else compares that to somebody else's work, it destroys any joy that you felt about what you've done. That's one part. But the other part is that, unfortunately, we have a system, an education system, that is entirely based on comparing children and young people with, yeah, one another. So I think, and this is part of the reason why I greatly admire people who are able to stay working as teachers within the education system, and the reason why I will never do that again, is because I don't agree with the education system that we currently have. Mm. I think it was designed during the Victorian times to produce people to do everything the same with, you know, authority figures and punishments, this sort of behaviourist model, we call it, with punishments and rewards to prepare people to work on a factory production line. And that's not the world that we live in.
No.
But our education system, it really, as a system, recognises or only values young people according to their data worth, by which I mean, what scores will they get in tests? And that is tracked through online systems. The data for young people and children, their learning and everything about them, is tracked all the way through their school career. And I really disagree with that. I do agree that we want to see children making progress. I don't agree this is the way to do it. And what, unfortunately, that has meant, I have seen this myself in the education system over the years, is that children who are neurotypical or super high-flying children have a very high worth. So, and I have personal experience of this myself with my own children. Children who are very bright and very able and are going to do really well in exams, they almost get, I don't want to say preferential treatment. Everybody knows that that's a high worth individual. Whereas young people with additional needs who are unlikely to produce the best grades, but yet who require more resources and support, which actually is expensive to the system, they have a lower worth. And so I have seen this, children where parents have been discouraged from sending their child to a particular school because it will skew their data, or where young people and children have been what's called off-rolled. So they've been moved off the roll of a school because they compromise the data of the school. And I see all these things happening within the education system. And I think that this is, for me, why I'm so passionate about speaking to parents, because if every parent really understands the needs of their child and thinks of themselves as being on their child's team, then hopefully they will feel well-informed and confident and empowered enough to have a conversation with the schools or whoever they're negotiating with to get the best possible outcome for their child.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's really powerful the way you've said that, Sue, as well. And I think young people are telling us exactly that as well, maybe in a slightly different way. But so, for example, a child will be told they've got autism at whatever age. They don't really understand what that means, but they're told they've got it. But it's seen as a difference. They go to school, and because they're learning different ways, that maths work or that maths lesson is really difficult. And they're comparing themselves to the other 30 other children in the class. That then, you know, reduces their self-esteem again. They go onto social media and they might see things in a slightly different way. And then they don't, you know, communicate in exactly the way that they see lots of other people communicating. That again makes them feel different. It's all about turning that around, because, as you said, the impact that has on parents who then feel, you know, inadequate or children who then feel that they are worth less than others is completely wrong. And that's not that that's coming from a system.
Yeah, exactly that. I mean, that's the thing I want to point out. I am in no way criticizing any people working in schools, because no. I know myself from the people that I meet, you don't go into this teaching profession or working in schools because you want to have a massive, huge salary and live the high life. So in no way criticizing any of those people working within the system, but I feel equally sorry for them.
Yeah.
Because what we also have, and another thing I don't like about the education system is this very narrow prescriptive curriculum, which really values maths and English and science, and really does not value the arts and creativity. And I think that creativity is so important. I think creativity needs to be at the centre of the education system. And because we have this very prescriptive curriculum that's so focused on maths and English and science, it stifles creativity, it kills creativity. And so what we have in the population of families that I work with who have children with any kind of additional needs, usually, not always, but the majority of families report that their children don't really enjoy school, and they come home feeling quite stressed, stress levels very high, anxiety levels very high at having to go in the morning. And so what they want to do when they come home is spend time alone in their rooms, perhaps, but in front of a screen, engaging in one of their preferred games. So I know Minecraft is one that I know is very popular. And the great thing about Minecraft is that there's so much that you can learn and do on Minecraft. It's such a fantastic game, actually. Mm. And I think that adults have this idea that they know better. And adults are always saying, oh, screen time, it's so bad. Everything about, you know, gaming is bad. Social media is bad. I mean, I think that there needs to be a balance in those things. You know, I think that social media on its own is not a bad thing. It's just what I call an echo chamber. So it just reflects what's happening in real life. So the real life is the thing that actually needs to change, not the social media. Social media has a really important role in connecting people. But also, you know, for my own children, I know my children have gone through a range of games, from, you know, Minecraft, RuneScape. Particularly what's huge in my household and has been for years is World of Warcraft. So I can see that my children have gained enormous benefit from these games, both in terms of their academic learning, their creativity, their sense of self-worth, their achievements that they've been able to make, and more than anything else, the social connections that they've been able to make. Because for my children, perhaps it's been difficult for them to find other people that are like them in school.
Yeah.
Because of this kind of feeling singled out as, you know, you've got some kind of difference to other children. You just feel that disconnect somehow. But when you go online, you can find other people that are like you, that are interested in the same things as you, where you can really be yourself and be creative. So I always say to parents who stress about all, you know, screen time, every family has to make their own decision about what's right and wrong for them. You know, I'm not saying unfettered screen time is a good thing. It absolutely isn't. There needs to be a balance. But I think that we also just need to look at what the benefits can be of some of the activities that young people are immersing themselves in, and see that actually it's giving them something that the education system is not allowing room for.
No, absolutely. And again, you've explained that so well. And I can just back that up by saying, when we speak to young people, especially when we're talking around their mental health, and we talk about, you know, outlets and things that can support them, screen time, as we've called it, is something that actually does support them. So it's not, you know, saying, oh, as adults, we think it's bad for you, so we'll knock it away. It's that balance word that you mentioned. So I just want to kind of finish. Like, I did have a list of stuff, Sue, but you kind of brought that into the conversation and it's just flowed. So that's brilliant. I just want to ask you, obviously, all of our work is aimed at young people. And obviously, we understand to support the young people, the parents are there, and that's really, really key. However, why do you think it's so important that we do listen to young people and that they're involved, obviously, in this conversation?
Well, that's exactly what I'm super passionate about, that young people are what's going to take our world forward into the future. And I think that we have systems that I've talked about that are stuck way, way, way in the past. And people my generation, you know, we're not able to think about how the technologies that are evolving now, how they could be used in the future. So I think there's so much that we need to listen to for young people. And I would say that as a parent, I definitely came into being a parent thinking I'm an adult and I know best. And what I've learned is I absolutely don't know best. You know, quite often my children know much better than I do. Of course, my job as a parent has been to guide them. Now my children are much older, you know, but when they were small, my job was to guide them. But I've learned so much from my children. I would say that what I have learned, particularly, I've learned so much about mental health, what causes poor mental health in children, what they need, how to support them. And I think that's great, that work that you're doing here and there with within the SEND clusters and the resilience work that you're doing. That's such an important piece of work. We really need to get a handle on that. I've also learned an awful lot about the LGBT community from my children too, something that I have learned and valued so much. And I've been connected with a local outreach group that I think are fantastic. I've learned so much about gaming. I became quite good at Mario Kart, but that feels like that was 100 years ago. Now technology's moved on and I'm afraid my skills just don't stretch to World of Warcraft. I have tried. I've learned so much about gaming, about online safety. I've learned so much about environmental issues as well. My middle son is at university studying cultural anthropology in Amsterdam, is hugely engaged in the environmental movement, and that's taught me so much. So I think I'm one parent and I've learned so much just from listening to my children. I think that the rest of the world, we can all learn something from that. You know, children have so much and young people have so much to bring and so much, so many thoughts. I just hope that the systems that we have doesn't stifle that out of them. You know, we need people like more like you, Kieran, to encourage young people to speak up.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Thank you, Sue. I mean, again, you've explained that really well, and there'll be so much information in here that I know parents and young people will be really glad to listen to. Can you just finish by telling us your website? Because I know you mentioned it earlier, but just in case people don't know.
Yeah, so the website is themazegroup.co.uk. And on social media, it's on Facebook, it's the Maze Group CIC, and I'm on Twitter, and I personally am on LinkedIn as well. And the YouTube channel is Maze Says, SAYS.
Great, fantastic. And when this podcast goes out, we'll make sure those links are linked in as well. So thank you very much for your time, Sue.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Kieran. It's always lovely to speak to you. Keep up the good work.
Yeah, you too. Keep up the good work. Thank you.
Everyone is different and special in their own way. We should be including everyone, so let's start today.